fish, fish, fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing.
Well, howdy, howdy, neighbors. How are you doing out there today? Yes, it's him. It's me. No Robert today. A little weird. I'm used to doing shows with Robert.
A lot of weird.
Yeah, it's me and RJ.
And we have no idea what we're doing without Robert.
And he's way up there in the golden tower of chrome and power, you know?
Yeah.
I'm down here in the pits, you know?
I mean, I know what buttons to push, Frank, but I have no information to impart at this point.
You know, there's possible. Are things possible? Yes. Are they probable? No. Does that mean they're real or not real? Well, I was thinking about that this morning. A customer came in, and he's fishing in Charlotte Harbor. Mind you, not in the Gulf, but actually in the harbor. And he was telling me about a Mako shark. And he swears it's a Mako because he's from the Northeast. He's caught Mako before. And he was talking to one of the captains. He said, no, that's impossible. It's just impossible. I said, not so much. I was out in the harbor one time, and I'm going along, and just about half, three-quarter mile off the sandbars of Boquilla, just north of there, I saw some fish coming out of the water. Now, mind you, I was a ways away, but they were big. These were big fish, and they were acting like dolphin, but I could see a fin sticking up, a big square-top fin, dark-colored. Now, I don't know if this was if it's a shark. Sharks don't kind of hump when they come out of the water. They just kind of come up like a submarine and go across the surface and go back down. But they don't, like, roll. They don't curve their body. And these huge fish-type creatures, water mammals, whatever they were, I swear to God, looked like a school of pygmy whales. I looked up every fin, you know, and everything I could find. I spent hours and hours going through pictures. And the only thing that made sense was pygmy whales. Now, could they be here? Yes. Is it possible? Yes. Is it highly improbable? Absolutely. But I know what I saw, and it wasn't an alien with, you know, gray skin and big eyes. It was a fish with a big square fin on the top of it, and multiples. I mean, talking a dozen, two dozen. So I think that's what it was. I mean, it's the only thing that made sense after studying all those different pictures and looking at stuff. But, of course, it could have been something else. Now, one of the stranger ones is up at the Fort Ogden Trestle. Now, you're talking like 15 miles upriver.
Yes, that's quite a ways.
It's, you know, you got to go up past Harbor Heights, past the Navigator, past the water treatment plant, past the 761 bridge, and up in there, all the way up by Fort Ogden. And this happened a number of years ago. It's got to be 15 years ago. One of my customers, because it was right before the trestle burned. And one of the regulars was up there, and this guy was a real fisherman, not a flake, probably in his 50s at that point. And he says, Frank, you're not going to believe me. He says, but I don't know what to believe. And I said, well, what happened? He said, well, I'm up there, and we're snook fishing. It was actually quite a while ago because they were still fishing for big snook at that point. They hadn't put the slot limit in yet. You could still keep one big snook. And big rod, big reel, looking for, you know, 40-pound snook. And he said, I swear it was a sailfish. And I'm like, gar? He says, Frank, I've caught 1,000 gars up there snook fishing. He says, this had a pointy nose. It had a fin that came up in the front and then went down along his back. And I'm trying to think of what else would fit the description. Now, the guy was real, was not pulling my leg. He wasn't, you know, punking me or anything like that. Just telling me about this fish. And truly, truly unlikely. I mean, almost at a point of impossible, except when you think the harbors or the river empties into Charlotte Harbor. Charlotte Harbor empties into the Gulf. The Gulf goes through the Straits and is in the Atlantic. Now, could some fish maybe got caught up in a bit of overripe apple juice being dumped into the thing and got tremendously drunk and just ran his butt all the way up the river? But fish don't, like, when they're at Boca Grande, they don't stick their head out of the water and go, oh, look, the lighthouse, I'm going into Charlotte Harbor. They're underwater and they swim. Now, is it hugely, highly highly improbable? But you can't say, no, this didn't happen.
You know, worldwide, there's stories of, especially marine mammals, like we have the Thames River in London. And they've had humpback whales come all the way up the Thames and going under several of the bridges. And you've seen that in California. There's places in New York where they've seen whales and other fish. One of the things I do know that I've read is when they've done necroscopies.
Right, when they do the autopsy on an animal.
They find brain parasites. So it's possible that any species of
I'm not
fish.
Letting them get near me with a CT.
Yeah, well,
Yeah, me neither. I don't even want to know.
Yeah, I mean,
why am I this way? I don't know. Is it probable I'm okay? Maybe, but highly improbable.
Highly okay. Unlikely, right. So it's possible that any species of fish can have some kind of problem. And, you know, they're pretty survivable creatures. They'll go. They won't live forever in fresher water or in places that they don't belong, which is why they're not in places they don't belong. But it is very probable, I think, that on rare occasion you're going to get a fish for some reason or other is going to head in the wrong direction and is going to go until he expires, whatever that may be. So could there have been a swordfish up in the Peace River? Well, could be.
Because we get them in the Gulf. Little sailfish, swordfish in the Gulf. I mean, whatever they are.
But, sailfish, yeah, sailfish.
You know, a small billfish of some type or another.
Right.
And, you know, like I say, I can't say no. And the guy was dead serious. He said, got him up, I lost him. He's thinking it was around 40 to 60 pounds. He's really nice-sized fish. And he got a good look at the head. He saw the fin. And his brain just went into overload. Like, this is impossible. Yeah. And when he was talking to me about it, that's what it seemed like. Now, the same thing with the guy with the Mako shark.
Now, we're seeing all kinds of sharks in the water right now, aren't we?
It's
amazing.
Hasn't
the reports have been coming in that there's been a lot of different species of shark that you don't normally see in this area?
And they said, well, we don't have great whites here. I said, absolutely untrue. He said, well, they're way out. I said, that's a matter of hours worth of swimming to come in?
Well, isn't it that shark, the white shark that they've been tracking with the radio transmitter that's attached to her, Catherine? She's been almost all over the world, that fish, and she came real close to coming in at Boca Grande. She was just a few miles offshore. You can actually go look that up. I forget the name of the site, but they track her.
Yeah.
And you can see the historical tracks, and she's come in pretty damn close to shore all along this part of Florida.
Well, you know, when people see stuff like a Mako in Charlotte Harbor or, you know, great white right there offshore or something like that, you know, we have the the whale sharks out there, too. I mean, these things are monstrous. There's all kinds of stuff. And is it unlikely certain fish are in one area or not? Yeah, but there's no rules on this, and there's no gates up.
No, there's no gates. And like I said, a fish that does something out of the ordinary isn't going to survive for very long when it goes to those places, but that doesn't mean they're not going to do it.
So, anyway, just one of those weird things. But for those of you, you know, look on our website, fishandfranks.com, you knew Doug and Mary Miner. They have been running Strike King since forever, and Doug has recently been put in charge of Lewes, L-E-W-S, rods and reels, some of the best bait casters around. And they came down. Well, I usually don't do it. If I'm got people coming in from out of town, I actually have I hire one of the captains to take us out, you know, my boat and all that. But, you know, it's more of a business deal. Well, Doug and Mary are such nice people. I said, I want to take them out in my boat. Well, I wasn't thinking. I haven't really been in the boat for a year. I've been on a few other boats, but not my boat. You know, took it out, little cruise just to make sure it was running. So Sunday, because we're going to take them out Monday, I end up spending about 3 hours putting new switches in so the live wells would work and the pumps and the bilge pumps, little things like bilge pumps, you know, good idea. So I kind of get it wired back all together because, you know, when a boat sits in Florida, it rots.
Anything that sits in Florida rots.
You know, you would just think it's nice, it's sunny, you know, we don't have all the snow, that things would last, you know. Oh, no. Every switch, when I went to flick the switch on, it just snapped off. The insides broke, they were corroded. I had to pull all these switches off, rewire all the switches, run a couple new wires, checked over the connections on some stuff. So, anyway, Monday morning comes, and we're going to pick them up down at Lashley because the tide was real low. And they have floating docks there, so your boat's always the same height on the dock. You don't have to crawl down into the boat. Pick them up, and I've got about, you know, 4 or 5 dozen shrimp varying sizes in there because you don't want all big shrimp, but you don't, you know, the small shrimp are better for some fish. The big shrimp are better for other fish. And if you got a little bit of everything, you're way better off. Like, if you're going to get 3 dozen, you know, a dozen regulars, dozen choice, dozen selects. You know, if you get different stuff, because you don't know what kind of fish you're going to run into. And with the smaller fish, they pick apart the big shrimp, and you never get a fish. And sometimes the bigger fish don't get as interested in the small baits. Even though I've caught monster fish on little shrimp, it sometimes helps just to throw them. So anyway, we go there and I said, all right, I'm going to add up to the thing. I'm going to throw the cast net a couple times, get a little bit of bait fish. Well, Terry hadn't run the boat for a long time while I threw the cast net. And we get up there and the wind is blowing Monday. I mean, it's blowing good. So we get over there, stop, and I say, okay, go reverse. You know, slow us down a little bit. I got holding the cast net. Well, she hits reverse. I stayed on the boat.
Oh, I was hoping that it was the other way around. I was looking for the big splash.
No, I actually stayed on the boat. But the cavitation from the prop just blew all through the marker. You're like, okay, probably not going to be much bait here. I said, all right, we'll try it. And she backed up. And it really wasn't her fault because I got to tell you, the first time I had thrown the cast net, first time in a year, I actually threw the cast net, not just in the parking lot teaching somebody, because when they come in, we always, you know, if they've never thrown a net or they don't know how do you throw a cast net if you've never done it? Nothing in your life prepares you for that. But I've been throwing cast nets a lot of teaching sessions in the parking lot, but actually throwing it at a marker, trying to get where you got 4 posts coming down and you're trying to curl part of the net in between 2 of the pilings to let the net sink down right next to them. And you've got to be within a few inches of where you want to be. Well, the first time I threw it, the whole thing just, because now I'm throwing with the wind and I'm thinking, okay, I'm not going to be able to get there from as far back as I was. I forgot about the wind. Threw the whole thing right into the markers. The whole cast net is stuck right on the pilings. I'm thinking, oh, my God, brand new cast net. It's the first time I'm throwing it. And they're expensive. It's $100, $150. So got her to back up. Blew a little more cavitation into the pilings, but we got backed up, and I was able to get the net off of the pilings, and I didn't even tear a hole in it. I was, like, shocked, but I did throw it into the pilings, so I'm going to go with that. And so I'm really impressing Doug and Mary at this point. You know,
their confidence levels were going way up at this point, right?
You know, I'm pretty sure they've been out with a lot of captains, you know, different charters and stuff like that. And here's Fishing Frank, whipping that cast net up into the air and right onto the marker. All right, so I get it off, and I said, all right, I'm going to do this again. So I went over on one of the other sides, and lo and behold, good cast. Nice circle. Part of the circle goes right between the legs. It's a four-poster marker, marker two, and drops right down, and I get probably four dozen pieces of bait. And that was the God shining on me for a nice cast. And put those in the live well, and okay, everything's going good. And I make another couple casts, nothing. One final cast, nothing. Snagged the marker a little bit on the last cast, but nothing bad. But so we get about three, four dozen pieces of bait fish, a couple of thread fins, a couple greenbacks, one sardine. And I'm thinking, all right, well, this is good. You know, I don't like a lot of the chumming anyway. And we've got four or five dozen shrimp with us. So I'm going to go up into the Mayaca cutoff because I know there's good fish up in the Mayaca cutoff right now. But I'm looking at the marker, and you can see about 2 feet of barnacles on it, which means you probably shouldn't go into the Mayaca cutoff because it's only got about 18 inches of water anyway. You might get 2 feet some days. And when you're seeing about 2 feet of barnacles on the markers, that means the water, because of the wind, was probably about 2 feet lower than normal. Well, the cutoff wasn't going to be a good idea. But I knew I could get in Rocky Creek. Because the problem with the cutoff is when you go running in there, you don't really know where you can set down. For years, I knew right where the big hole was. But Irma filled that hole in. So it's got a little bit of water here, a little bit of water there. But it's not a guaranteed spot I can come off plane and be in water. If you're off by just a little bit, you're in 6 inches of water, and you're not going anywhere the rest of the day. So I said, no cutoff. I can go into Rocky Creek. I know there's water in Rocky Creek. Even on the lowest tides ever, there's still 3-4 feet of water. So I skim across the flats, kind of bumping the bottom, tagging a little bit, trimming up, got slammed the throttle all the way down, got the motor trimmed back. Jack plates up, boom, set down in just perfect. I'm like, all right, getting a little bit of my groove back. Not so much. We get right when you go into Rocky Creek, at the end there's a curve. And I fish that left-hand side, I fish the pocket there, and on the other corner. Well, I have a sticket pin and a couple of mushroom anchors that I use. Because I'm too cheap to buy a power pole. I don't want, you know, it's nice just hit the button and they're going to stop you. You know, the fiberglass rods go down into the bottom. And not so much. I'm putting the anchor out the back. I'm trying to get the one in the front. And the wind blows right in where the fish are. The whole boat blows, the wind blows the whole boat right in on top of the fish. And it's funny because, you know, people always say, how can you tell everybody where to go? I said, because you tell people, 100 people, most of them don't go there anyway. Go to this spot, there's fish. Most of them don't even go. And the ones that do look around, they go, wow, that looks perfect. Be a lot of fish there. And they go park their boat there, right on the fish. Yeah, that's why we were sending you there, because this was a beautiful spot, and it's going to look like it holds fish. Don't put your boat where the beautiful spot is that looks like it holds fish. Put your boat away from that, back, cast into that. Don't park on it, you know? But I ended up parking the boat right on it, had to start the motor, reverse, forward, get back upwind, reset all the anchors. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, I just blew in, dropped 24 feet of boat right where the best fishing is. And I said, all right, well, I'm here. I've got it reset. So I'm just going to give it 15 minutes, 20 minutes, see if we get a bite. No bites. And it's a really pretty little spot back there. It is nice. And they started talking about, oh, it's just so nice to be on the boat. So
That's a red flag if I ever heard one.
It's kind of like somebody going, here, fishy, fishy.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Two things you really don't want to hear when you're taking people out fishing. Oh, we just enjoy being in the boat. It's such a nice day. Because in the back, you know in the back of their mind, it's like, you suck, Frank. This is it. You just, you know, can't even anchor the boat. You're blowing into there. And it's funny. I do this a lot, but, you know, it does require some practice.
What, screwing up requires practice?
No, I'm pretty good at that. I'm actually getting it right.
Oh, okay, getting it right part. Yes, actually, I agree with you 100%.
Remembering how to set the anchors out so they actually hold and, you know, not getting your boat in on top of the fish. Even though I know all the rules, if you don't practice it every once in a while, it's hard to do when it's you doing it, you know? When you're a teacher, it's you remember every little detail when you're showing somebody or teaching somebody that. You can remember all these details. Now you get on the water, and the first three things you know you're supposed to do, you start with the fourth. So we back up, get everything ready, get out to the outside. By now, the wind's really cranking. And the problem with Rocky Creek is that wind was kind of blowing out of the south-southwest. When you come out of the mouth, you're in the teeth of the wind. But there was enough waves going across. I looked and I said, I can surf that. So I just hammer down the throttle, jump up on plane, hook the left. I want to stay in the shallows because the out, further out you get, the rougher it gets, the deeper the water. So I'm playing in the shallows and I'm riding the tops of the waves. I'm going, okay, I'm getting this back a little bit. This ain't too bad. And we head upriver. One of the things I love about Southwest Florida is if the harbor's blowing really bad, you can go into Miaka River, the Peace River. You've got canals. You've got rivers. You've got options here. In a lot of places, you either got the bay or the Gulf, or just the Gulf, or maybe the intercoastal. But here we got the intercoastal. We've got harbor. We've got bays. We've got rivers. It's just awesome. So we head up the Peace River. And I'm thinking, all right, you know, the tide's just coming in a little bit. I said, if I head up to Sansucci and get up there by the trestle, Doug's like me. He loves antiques and old-time stuff. So take him up by the trestle, and we pocket back in a corner, and I go to anchor the boat, and the wind's blowing, and everything's really good. I go to set the bank back anchor. The wind stops. The current grabs the boat, spins it around right into the pilings. I'm like, okay. So I throw an extra anchor off front and said, we'll just sit up here next to the pilings. Cast over, and we're in the right spot, the right time. Everything's going good. And I got free-lining shrimp over there, free-line a greenback over there. And his wife, she gets two bites. We're there about 40 minutes. I said, two bites does not a trip make. Time to get out of this spot. I don't hang out in the spots very long. You know, I'm going to give it a half hour, 40 minutes. If I don't have something good to show for it, lost a fish, I don't believe a bite is worth staying for. So pack everything up, get everything going, take off, head upriver, and we're going to our third spot. And I get there, and with the incoming water, there's usually good snook fishing there. And they're not big snook, 18 to 24 inches, but with the light tackle we had, they would have been fun. Get up there and anchor the boat up, and I do this perfectly now. I've done a couple of spots. I got the whole thing back, and I'm on my game. And pull up in there, glide, shut the boat down, glide right in, drop back anchor off, drop front anchor off, a little deeper water, can't use the stick it. And we're perfect spot, perfect place, and get everybody casted out, a couple shrimp, a couple bait fish, see what the fish are going to want. We got one up, and we're not getting hit. I'm looking, and there's a grouping of leaves next to the boat, and they didn't move 3 inches either way. The tide hadn't reached that far up the river yet. The water was sitting dead still. Now, if you're going to fish for snook or redfish, you have to have some moving water. When the water's not moving, they just don't feed. I don't know what that's about. Why would some fish like sheephead, snappers, they'll feed on a slack tide, moving tide, they'll feed. Any idea what the difference would be?
I think any time there's water motion, the prey animals are having more difficulty moving around. You know, the shrimp are going to have to fight the current, the small bait fish are fighting the current, and that's the ideal time for, especially for a sight predator like a snook, you know, to harbor an attack. So I think, yeah, any kind of moving water, and a snook's not going to waste his energy. No. You know, if the water's still and it's harder to catch his prey, he's just going to sit there until the water starts moving again. That'd be my guess. Yeah,
and it could be they can smell the bait coming at them. The bait's being washed
That's
through
right.
them.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we get in this spot. The leaves don't move. The tide don't move. I still suck. I'm starting to hear again, boy, you know, we've seen some really pretty places today. This is nice. This is so nice just being out in the boat relaxing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then the back of my head is ready to explode. I'm like, yeah. So we're right up there by the navigator. I said, let's go get some lunch. Head into the navigator. The three of them had awesome grouper sandwiches. I had my hamburger. I haven't eaten there at the navigator yet since the new owners took over. And my barometer, whenever I go to a new restaurant, is I want to have a hamburger. Because if you do a good burger, I'm sure the rest of your food's going to be good. And I'll expand off of that. And on the other hand, how bad can they really screw up a hamburger? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's the safe food. Great hamburger. The grouper sandwiches were huge. They had nice breading on them. They were probably 3/4 inch thick, maybe an inch thick. Nice. Actually, I believe it was actually grouper of some type. Big flaky chunks of meat. And the navigator's kind of cool. Now, the service is slow. That place is mobbed, and they can't find enough help. You go up there, you're going to have a nice sandwich, nice day, but go there to take some time. And it's worth it. You sit outside, you sit inside. It's worth the extra time for the meal. You know, you're going to really enjoy it. But we get done, we get back on the boat, and we're all kind of revived. And the girls were really impressed because the old navigator, they had those god-awful just fiberglass porta-potties out there, you know, and 80-degree weather and porta-potties, not a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
The new owner, he's got one of those trailers with, like, marble inside and everything's immaculate and clean and beautiful bathrooms. So they came back out. They're all happy. We had a great meal. They had clean bathrooms. Getting back on the boat. And I say, well, we'll ride some creeks and see some sights. And again, they're still going, oh, this is just amazing. This is so beautiful. We've such relaxing time on the boat. I'm thinking, yeah, grumble. I don't remember who the cartoon character used to mutter to himself. I think Yosemite Sam. Kind of what I was doing under my breath because it's nice having a nice day, but it's not what you want. So we head down, and we get to one of the rookery islands, and we're seeing storks, herons, some egrets, and across the way in their normal place, there's a whole tree full of buzzards, and they're kind of neat looking at the buzzards because they stack up in like groups of twos and threes. But they were having a great time, and then all of a sudden we see there's about 8 roseate spoonbills.
Wow, now that's cool.
Now, the roseate spoonbills, and they're in their mating plumage. And they're just bright pink. And when the first one flew over us, we saw that there was more on the other side of the island, flew over. I thought it was a flamingo because I couldn't see the round bit on the front of his bill. I thought it was a darn flamingo. And it comes right over us and drops down into the trees. I'm going, wow. I said, I thought it would be a roseate, but it was bright white, bright pink. It's where I forgot they were mating plume. You know, they get different color than they're normal. So we go around the other side of the island. Here's at least 8 roseate spoonbills all starting their nesting and all that. And it's really cool. And then it dawned on me, and I started telling Doug, I said, you know, I got a spot just around up a couple islands from here that every time we see roseate spoonbills in the mangroves, there's redfish under them. And he's like, huh? Yeah, these pink birds, whenever we see roseate spoonbills there's always redfish right underneath them. And I said, I've never tried it here, and I don't believe there'd be any fish there. But I got thinking about that other spot. Now, roseate spoonbills go through, and they get little shrimp and crustaceans and stuff from around the mangrove shorelines. That's years ago, there was so much iodine in the water that they pretty much permanently turned them pink from the iodine in what they ate. A lot of iodine in your system, you turn pink. But so we get done with the bird watching, and one this one, Rosie the Spoonbill, geographic moment, National Geographic moment. I mean, 15 feet in the air, 10 feet off the side of the boat. Full wingspread, just, and circles the boat like three times. He's got pictures you wouldn't believe, you know. And they were big into the birds. But they go, oh, Frank, this was so awesome getting to see the wildlife and everything. It's been such a wonderfully relaxing day. In other words, I still suck. So I leave there and I head around. I said, I'm going to stop and see if there's any roseates on those mangroves. Because I kid you not, when there's roseate spoonbills in those mangroves, there's always redfish right underneath them. And right in front of those, you've got about 15, 18 feet, and then the water gets like 8 inches deep. But in that 15, 18 feet wide, it goes from 18 inches to 3 foot deep. It's a nice trough, and the trough goes in and around the corner of the island. So I came around the corner, stopped, just start drifting the boat in, because luckily the wind was blowing us right in there. And dropped my anchors out, so we're broadside. We're right off the edge of the trough. We got 8 inches of water on one side of us. We got 2-3 feet on the other. And so we put some shrimp on, free lining the shrimp out up by the mangroves, put a white bait on one, threw it up there. Nobody's getting hit. And I go into live well, and I get a bunch of the dead shrimp, probably about 8 of them. Rip the head off, throw it in there, rip the body in 3 or 4 pieces, toss it into the trough. Because the water's coming in that, and it's being flushed around the corner. So if I can get enough stink right there, that should draw whatever fish are all through that trough right up to us. And all of a sudden, we get a hit. It's, Mary is having a ball. She's fighting this fish and fighting it, and I'm watching the rod going bump, 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 pouncing up and down. I'm like, no. Oh, yeah, we're going to catch fish, catfish. Now, catfish are amazingly fun to catch, but if your reputation is Fish and Frank, oh, it's such a nice day being out in the water with you. It was so relaxed, and we saw so many pretty things.
And we caught a catfish.
And we did catch fish. We caught some catfish. So, in other words, I still suck. All right. So, one catfish goes by, 2, 3 catfish, 4. And Terry says, my line's going too fast. We got to slow it down. So I grab a split shot, stick it on there, and I cast forward, dropped it right up underneath the mangroves, and 22-inch redfish in maybe a minute. So I'm not that bright, but I'm bright enough to know if I change one of the other ones, I change from the catfish to redfish. So chunk Terry's bait back up in there, and I get Doug's, and I throw a big, heavy split shot on, put the shrimp on. I got the split shot about 8 inches away from the shrimp using a 1/0. Actually, I was using pink hooks because we had chartreuse and black hooks out. The catfish weren't hitting them. They were hitting the ones that we had with the 2 rods with the pink hooks on them. So I left the pink hooks on, put the shrimp on there, split shot, tossed them up underneath the mangroves. Now, the other thing I did was I didn't use live shrimp. I used a couple of the dead shrimp that were in the bottom of the live well.
The stinky ones.
Hooked them through the tail, and I right before the flipper part of the tail, you got a real hard knuckle. So I went in from the bottom of the shrimp out the top with that 1/0 little hook with the split shot, dead shrimp, tossed it under mangroves, same as I had gotten Terry's redfish with. And all of a sudden, Doug's rod takes off. Whoa! And I mean, that rod is bent. And he's fighting and fighting and fighting. And he's just about up to the boat. And we can see this. It's a monster redfish. It's around 30 inches. And big, fat, beautiful bronze gold. And then Terry's rod takes off. And Doug's redfish is back towards the mangroves. It's coming back out. Her fish is up underneath the mangroves. It gets rod down. Don't let it get, you know, the line get tangled up in branches. And it's going back and forth. And finally, we land Doug's, and he's got this beautiful redfish. I got it on the bow grip in the water, holding it right there. He's holding on to that. I grab my other bow grip. We go over, I get Terry's fish out. And so now we got these beautiful set of twin sisters. I mean, these are, I think Doug's was maybe a pound bigger, but him and Terry got these awesome redfish. Now I don't suck. This is the three redfish in the boat. One about 22, maybe 24. And then Terry caught this other monster, 30-incher. Doug gets a matching 30-incher. And I'm thinking, okay, this is awesome. I throw a dead shrimp on Mary's hook, stick a split shot on, pitch it up under the mangroves. 17, 18-inch redfish. So last end of the trip, I don't suck. Nice scenery, historical stuff, stopped at Liverpool, the train trestle, one built in 1917, the other 1850, got to see landmarks from the 1850s, from 1917, so we got historical stuff with beautiful scenery, mangrove rides, back into the lush swamps. I mean, we did all this stuff in one day, ended it off with some amazing fish.
And they thought you planned it that way, I'm sure.
Oh, man, I tell you, and there's nothing like that. Because if you do that at the beginning of the day, by the end of the day, it's forgot.
Right.
But if you can get all that stuff that we had, oh, it's such a relaxing time, and the scenery is so beautiful here, and we love the historical stuff, and we caught these amazing big fish.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I was happy. It was a long ways to go to get to I don't suck.
Yeah, and I didn't think we were ever going to get there, but apparently we did.
Sorry about that. It was a lot of fun.
So I have a cast net story.
Okay.
The first time I ever threw a cast net, I have cousins down here in Florida. They lived in the Gibsonton, Apollo Beach area. And they were going to take me fishing on the Alafi River. And, of course, they're throwing cast nets. And I, being coming from New England, had no idea what a cast net was. And it's, like, really cool. I'm watching. And these are, you know, old-time boys. They knew what they were doing. And so I said, I want to try that. Show me how to do a cast net. Gathers it all up and sets me up, and I toss the cast net, and I'm watching it sink, and my cousin Emery says to me, he said, you know, you're supposed to tie it to your wrist.
Oh, that hurts.
Yeah, it did.
There's $100 down in the bottom.
Yep, exactly.
I've actually, you know, watched that. I had a net, and I thought I had it attached to my wrist because, I mean, I always do it, but maybe I just overlooked it. I'm out by marker one. It's about 14 feet of water. I threw the net. I watched the line go hit the water. Out comes the wallet. Off goes the cell phone. In the water I go. The only thing I forgot to do is take off my eyeglasses. But I could see that rope diving down, grab the end of the rope, swam back up, got back in the boat. I was able to save mine. But now, oh, we're changing the front of our tide charts.
Okay.
And these morons in Tallahassee decided to expand their closed seasons on stuff. So I was, Buffalo Graphics makes our tide charts, real nice people. And we're having them change the front of them, and it's going to be edible fish that are legal to keep with their size limits. So triple tail, 18 inches, black drum, 14 to 24. Cobia, 33 inches, mangrove snappers, 10 inches, Spanish mackerel, 12 inch, sheephead, 12 inch, flounder, 12 inches, pompano, 11 inches, and whiting, no size limit. So that's going to be on the front. And then what we did was I have a phone number. If you're out on the water and you don't know what you caught and you get a picture of it with your phone, you can text it to 941-268-6460. That number will also be on the tide chart. 268-6460. We'll get the picture, and we can tell you what it is, and we will text you back with what it is and legal stuff, or even call you back with what it is and what size and bag limits there are on it, if there are any.
Well, that's a really cool service.
And so if you're going to call us to ask questions, call the 625-3888 number. But if you need to text us a picture, find out what a fish is or anything like that, it's the 941-286-6460. But get into a little bit of the fishing report. I didn't mean to take so long on the story, but
it was a great story, and it turned out right.
I was so happy, because with me, you never know.
Yes, that's true.
Because I'm going to be honest, this was not my finest day, you know, and I think the moral of the story is,
It was a little better than the day you sunk the boat.
Yeah, it was better than the day I sunk the boat. I've been telling people, and change your rig before you change the spot. It's real little detail in there that a lot of people might not have gotten. We were freelining thread fins, live shrimp, and the current would grab them and move them along the mangroves, which I thought would be the best thing to do because, you know, the fish is there, the bait's moving along, it's probably going to go right in front of them, they're going to hit it. But the moral of the story was I was putting number one split shots on there, bigger, number two, number one, big split shots, probably quarter ounce. Line wasn't moving. Pitched it right at the drip edge or a little underneath, and the line did not move. The shrimp sat still, a dead shrimp sitting still, not moving with the current the way we were fishing, catching catfish. Once we pegged the shrimp in place, casted right at the edge of the mangroves or a little under with a different rig, a sinker, all of a sudden we started catching fish. Now, that's a key critical part of the whole story. We've been telling people, just because you're fishing a spot doesn't mean there's not fish there.
It just means they're not interested in what you're offering at the moment.
Or the way you're offering it.
Or the way you're offering it, right.
So you might have to change what and how in order to get those fish to hit.
Yeah, that's a critical piece of advice, Frank, because a lot of people do that. Oh, there's no fish here after 20, 30 minutes of throwing the same lure over and over and over again.
Does this mean when I was at the first two spots, I only fished one way? I was free lining, drifting the baits with the current. Did I miss out on awesome fish in every place I stopped because I didn't actually remember my own critical need to know advice?
I would say so.
If I would have stuck a sinker on at any one of those points, could I have gotten fish all day instead of having to wonder what the heck happened and only catch fish in the last 40 minutes of the day? I'm not trying to give myself a break here. I'm trying to go over this in a realistic fashion. And I think the reason I did not catch fish in the first three spots we stopped at, because I didn't follow my own advice. I didn't change my rigs. I did the same thing in every spot over again, thinking I'm going to get a different result. Yeah. Really stupid.
Yeah, change the bait, change the presentation, change the rig, see what happens, and then decide to move somewhere else.
But I didn't do it.
No, you didn't.
So three out of four spots, I did what I thought would work. I didn't change anything up. I fished it for a half hour, 40 minutes. 15 minutes in, I had three to four lines out all day. I could have put any one of those in a different configuration, and every one of those spots where I've caught fish before might have been a winner.
Right, and that's been your advice on this show numerous times. You got a couple of rods. Don't rig them all the same. Rig them different. And the one that's catching fish, then you go back and rig the other rods back to the one that's catching fish.
So what do you call a person who preaches something all day long and, you know, tells other people, you got to do this, got to do that, you got to do this, got to do that, and then when they get out, doesn't do it? Now, I know most people call them Democrats, but we're not going to go to there.
No, we're going to call them Fish and Frank.
No, we're just messing with it. There is a name for people like that.
Yeah, I don't know, stubborn.
Yeah, but there's a, you know, egotistical jerks or hypocrite or something like that.
Something like that.
But I was trying to be funny before, you know. So anyway, it fell on deaf ears. I can hear the whole world going, your jokes suck. All right, anyway, what's your best bet fishing along the beaches? Any idea?
Oh, I'm going to have to channel Robert here. And I'm cheating because I'm looking at notes.
Now, if you're up by Venice, what's a good bet in Venice? We'll do it easy.
Well, you got the jetties, right?
All right.
You're going to see sheep's head on the jetties. You're going to see some snook. And there's a lot of jacks in the water right now.
All right. If you're swinging down, let's say, Northport.
You're going to see some tarpon and snook in the canals.
There's a bunch of little tarpon.
And when we're talking little, we're talking how many pounds, Frank? When we say little tarpon.
I'm going to go better with inches because they're real weird on the weight. But from 12 inches to 48 inches.
Right. And a 48-inch tarpon is fun to catch.
They're amazing. Now, we went out tarpon fishing yesterday afternoon for a little while. And these fish were all laid on the bottom, and I never put a sinker on to go after them. Never did.
Okay.
2 days in a row, I didn't. Even when I learned my trick, I didn't do it the second day. I feel good, though. Carl didn't get him one either because we were out, and you know you have that 1-2-all switch?
Mm-hmm.
You know, off, 1-2-all switch? That burnt out. So I had to tear that out of the boat, wire the battery direct to the motor so we could actually start it and get back. And I got back, and Carl took Doug and Mary out for the rest of the day. And I thought he'd be able to do it, but he didn't do it either. But he actually found the tarpon that was laying deep on the bottom.
Well, when you're seeing black drum also in the waters around here.
So, let's see. I think we only got like 1 or 2 minutes left, right?
Yeah, I got a few minutes left.
Well, we got like five?
Like five, yeah.
Okay. All right. Out in the Gulf of Mexico, the wind is supposed to blow really rough here for a little while.
For like the next week, I'm hearing. We're going to have a lot of wind in the next week. And we've had a lot of wind the last 3 or 4 days.
I can tell you what, Monday and yesterday, that was windy.
There were recorded by the National Weather Service 50-mile-an-hour gusts.
I believe it.
And there was actually quite a bit of tree damage and, you know.
Doug had out a pair of those Strike King sunglasses, and they're nice. I wore a pair all day. Nice to wear. But they're very light.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at the boat ramp, and he took us off to put them in his pocket. The wind blew them out of his pocket. They hit the ground. And you know how people, when you're chasing a piece of paper going down the ground?
Mm-hmm.
They're such lightweight glasses that the wind, the gust would come and off the glasses would go again. It was like chasing a paper across the parking lot. And so I knew the wind had to be blowing pretty good. I was guessing 50, 60 mile an hour gust. So what else we got around the area?
Well, we got pompano over along the beaches and the passes now. They're starting to see them.
Now, there has been some sand fleas. Middle Beach, up by Venice, a little bit around Stump Pass, and I haven't had any reports from Boca. But you take the Florida snow shovel, sand flea scoop, shark's teeth getter thing, and when you get out to the Gulf, you want to, right where the water is, don't walk out into the water. Just stand right there and look, and you'll see a little tiny drop-off right there where the waves are. Start digging right there with your sand flea scoop. Rinse it in the water, and what you're looking for is little creatures about as big as the end of your pinky finger, from the last knuckle to the tip of your finger, that last little joint. Actually, it kind of looks like that. They're rounded, and you see little legs on the bottom. They won't hurt you. They can't bite. But put a hook in on this butt side from the bottom out the top, and usually about a number two, and it's really hard to do with a circle hook. You almost got to use a J hook. But just go in from the bottom side and out the top, staying at far back, 25% away from his tail. You know, you want to 3/4 away from the front, 1/4 of the way from the back. And pitch those out there into the surf, and bam, bam, bam. If there's any pompano around, you're going to get hooked up. And it's not bad to have a little bit off the bottom, but just getting them out there at all, you're going to best chance of hooking up. Sheephead right now, number one sheephead thing. They're blowing away the fiddler crabs. People actually have been finding sand fleas in the last couple of weeks. And when I mention them, the guys are like, we were out fishing by the Gulf. I said, did you find any sand fleas? Oh, yeah, man. We were getting hit left and right, pompano and whiting and all kinds of stuff on them. It was crazy. I wouldn't have thought it.
Yeah, this may be the time that the sand flea hatch maybe, so I don't know. But I've heard that, too, that there's a lot of sand fleas around, which is great for fishing for pompano. The last thing that I have on my list is there's some real big jacks in the PGI canals right now.
Monster. 10, 15-pounders.
That's right. And a 10, 15-pounder is the equivalent of a 50-pound of any other fish on the planet.
It's got to be. If jacks would learn to tail walk,
or jump,
they'd be the most protected species on the planet.
You betcha. But no, if you want an experience, we only got about another minute left here, but if you want an experience of catching a big, heavy, fighting fish, and you want to know what it is like to fight a fish, go to the PGI canals and hook up for jacks. What would we use for them, Frank?
For the jacks?
Yeah.
The weirdest thing is, just keep in mind, you're seeing them most of the time. So that means they're close to the surface. They're in usually the top 2-3 feet. You can use a shrimp under a bobber, chunk of bait fish under a bobber. You can freeline a shrimp. But most people are going to throw a small silver spoon, white or silver lure, anything that goes fast up by the top or at least stays up by the top. Popping corks are pretty good. You got to have a little bit of motion. You want to be jerking it, twitching it, and not going real slow. And you'll be really surprised how easy they are to hook up. But throw the wrong thing, the finickiest fish on the planet. But small, excuse me, two and a half inches long, and work it quick. Stay near the top. Topwater lures are good. Well, Fish and Frank here. RJ in command and control in his gold and chrome tower of power, and Robert suspiciously missing, but he's not missing his mommy because he went to see his mommy. So that's all good. And we'll see you guys. I won't see you. I'm going to see my gold microphone next week, but we will talk to you next week. Bye, boys and girls.
Bye-bye.